Welcome, I'm Rose Aguilar, and this is Your Calls One Planet series. Over the past 4 years, the Trump administration has inflicted major damage on the planet by weakening and dismantling more than 120 regulations designed to protect the environment and our health and limit greenhouse gas emissions. The rollbacks have also opened up millions of acres of public lands to mining and oil and gas drilling. Under Donald Trump, the government has auctioned off millions of acres of lands to the fossil fuel industry, according to a Guardian investigation. Trump has stacked the administration with former fossil fuel lobbyists and conservative activists. The department often sells access to these lands at rock-bottom prices and in places that are sacred to tribal communities, important to imperiled animals, and critical to prevent runaway climate change. Of the more than 600 million acres of U.S. public lands, the administration has leased over 5.4 million acres, an area the size of New Jersey, to oil and gas companies. Trump officials are currently rushing to auction off rights to the Arctic National Wildlife Refuge before the Biden administration can block it. Joining us to discuss all of this is Jimmy Tobias, an independent reporter for The Guardian and The Nation. Jimmy was formerly a trail worker with the U.S. Forest Service. Hi, Jimmy. Thanks so much for your work and thanks for joining us.
Thank you so much for having me.
Well, it's great to have you. You know, Jimmy, after the last election, we decided to dedicate every Monday to these issues because we knew they wouldn't get the attention that they deserve. So we've been following all of this very, very closely. And I just wonder, as someone who covers these issues, how are you reflecting back on the 4 years that the Trump administration, the damage that this administration has really done to the environment and the planet?
Well, yeah, I mean, you know, it's certainly left us in a pretty big hole in terms of so many environmental issues. I think, you know, I don't think this country's seen sort of as bold an assault on core conservation values in, you know, in living memory. You know, just you know, as your listeners probably already know, an agency like the Interior Department is a huge, huge huge agency with some 70,000 employees. It manages more than 500 million acres of public lands across the country, or about one fifth of the U.S. landmass. It manages our parks, our wildlife refuges. It enforces the Endangered Species Act and other essential laws. It controls huge reserves of oil, gas, and timber. And so it's just incredibly influential. It's hard to overstate its impact on American life. And as you mentioned, you know, this administration just stocked the place with lobbyists and far-right ideologues and activists, and they knew what they were doing, and they did, you know, I think it's a lot of their critics say they've just done an enormous amount of damage.
I think the headline of the piece that you wrote with two colleagues says it all, revealed the full extent of Trump's meat cleaver assault on U.S. wilderness. I mean, so much has happened over the last four years. And I mean, even we've had a hard time keeping up with everything. But do you think that the public really understands the extent of this damage?
You know, I think these sorts of policy issues and these sorts of environmental issues don't get a lot of coverage, or certainly not the coverage that they deserve. You know, they don't make necessarily for great headlines on cable. But for people who have been following it, it's been pretty astonishing. I'm starting just with the people who got put in place. You know, the Interior Secretary is a former lobbyist for big oil and big ag, and you know, the top lawyer at the department is, you know, used to advise the Koch brother network. And so these are the people who, you know, they put enemies of the agency inside the agency. And so you just go down the list of environmental laws, some of the oldest laws in the country, you know, some of the oldest laws, public interest laws in the country, and they just went after each and every one of them. So it's been pretty astonishing, even if it hasn't gotten the attention, you know, it deserves.
Right. And I've been following the vote count, because obviously we're still counting votes. And just this morning, I'm reading from The Guardian right here. Trump advisor Robert O'Brien said, quote, if the Biden-Harris ticket is determined to be the winner, and obviously things look that way now, we will have a professional transition. And, you know, we're going to do a lot of shows in the coming months, Jimmy, about the massive vote count that Trump got. I mean, more of people voted for him this time than last time. More than 73 million people voted for Donald Trump. And preparing for the show today, I just wonder, you know, how many of these people agree with what this administration has done to the wilderness?
You know, I honestly don't think most people agree with their environmental policies at all. I think the support he gets is for other reasons. But, you know, a law like the Endangered Species Act, for instance, it has upwards of like 80% approval from the American public. And this administration has done everything it can to undermine that law. And, you know, people don't talk about that and people aren't necessarily aware of it. But and I think if people were, they would look less favorably on this administration, its record. But, you know, there's been a sort of a public facing side of this administration that's talked one way. And then in the background, you know, these operatives like David Bernhardt and his colleagues at the Interior Department have pursued other goals that don't get nearly as much attention. And so I don't think most Americans would support gutting the Endangered Species Act or going after the Antiquities Act or, you know, handing over our common lands to oil and gas interests. I just don't think that is politically popular. It's just as easy to get away with it because these issues aren't seeing the kind of attention from the media and from politicians as they deserve.
Right. And then you have to wonder also, and we're going to do shows about this, people are increasingly, especially on the right, increasingly getting their news from right-wing sources, and they might not even hear about some of these policies.
Yeah, you know, and it's, to be honest, even if you're watching, you know, especially cable news and things like that, you know, you're not going to really see them there either. Right. You know, very few news outlets, you know, consistently cover endangered species issues or, you know, consistently cover the way our public lands are being managed. And most people, frankly, I don't even think are aware of what the Interior Department does fully. And so that's why, you know, when I have a conversation like this, I always kind of like to start off just describing the department because it's so huge and so influential, but it really doesn't get, you know, everyone's heard of the Park Service, but fewer people have heard of the Interior Department, I think. And so it's just something to keep working on.
Well, given that you do know what the Interior Department does and you follow it closely, you retweeted information about the Biden-Harris transition team for the Interior Department. What do you make of the people who are on that list?
Yeah, you know, many of them are Obama administration alums. And so to some degree, it kind of looks like an Obama restoration. And, you know, I think the Obama administration, obviously they didn't go after public lands or environmental laws. And they promoted a lot of, you know, they promoted wildlife and public land conservation to some degree. But there were a lot of critics of their approach, too. And so, you know, I think a lot of people are looking for a new direction for the agency, one where, you know, the White House and leaders in the Democratic Party actually prioritize some of these issues that don't get as much attention, even though they're incredibly popular. So I think people are like, you know, the people I've been talking to people about it, and I think people both, you know, see it as a bit of a Obama restoration, but are also hoping that this time around they'll go further to protect our, you know, our public lands and wildlife in a time where there's an extinction crisis that's unfolding. There's a climate crisis that's unfolding. You know, there are serious, very serious environmental problems that need to be addressed. And the Interior Department is perfectly placed to do so if it has the right leadership with the right kind of ambitions.
Mm. Well, and you also have incredible activist movements on the ground that are going to hold the administration accountable, especially the Sunrise Movement, the youth-led progressive climate group. According to The Guardian, they reached 3.5 million young voters in swing states. And they say that, you know, they're going to hold the Biden administration to account. One of the co-founders said, we'll have to see if Joe Biden is true to his word when he says that climate change is his number one issue.
Yeah, I mean, I think, I think a lot of it will be about the kind of personnel they put in charge of these agencies. A lot of climate activists talk about the EPA and they focus a lot on the EPA. But my personal opinion, and maybe this is, just because I work on this agency, but my personal opinion is that the Interior Department has much more sway over the future of fossil fuel policy and other things like that in the United States. And so I do think movements like Sunrise, if they're serious about, influencing federal policy, really need to take a hard look at the Interior Department and study it and understand the way it influences, greenhouse gas emissions, for instance. It has huge sway in that area. So I hope that, for these people who are, for these activists who are really trying to deal with this issue, I really hope they spend a lot of time on the Interior Department because I think they need to.
Before we dive in and talk about the very important report you worked on with two colleagues, when you look at the damage that this administration has done, how do you see it playing out in terms of the Biden administration coming in and reversing some of this damage? Because there is a long list to get to.
Yeah, that's right. And, most of what the Trump administration has done on the environmental front has been done via executive action, which means, that's not to say it's easy to change, but it won't require legislation to undo a lot of the things they've done. For instance, one of their first and most controversial moves was basically abolishing Bears Ears National Monument, which was a large national monument under, created under the Antiquities Act by President Obama in southern Utah at the behest of a coalition of Native American tribes and conservation groups. That monument had, pretty severe pushback from right-wing forces in Utah, including a network of Koch brother-backed think tanks and, politicians in Utah. And the Trump administration slashed it and it was a pretty unprecedented move. And Joe Biden, when he comes into office, if he wants on day one, he could sign an order and reestablish that monument. So there's much that can be done immediately by the incoming administration if it actually wants to prioritize these issues.
I appreciated that you started with Bears Ears in this piece because, when you talk to Native people, they point out that, public lands are stolen lands, and it's really important to emphasize that. You report that for thousands of years, Native nations of the U.S. Southwest lived in the majestic canyons of Bears Ears, but it was land that conservative politicians and corporate interests also sought to control. In late 2016, the Hopi celebrated when the Obama administration protected Bears Ears by declaring it a national monument, which sheltered it from development and extraction. What happened just 1 year after Trump took office?
Yeah, he went to Utah in December 2017 and gathered together with all of, a large group of right-wing legislators and activists, and basically radically reduced the size of Bears Ears at the behest of conservative politicians and right-wing think tanks. There was a shadow campaign against the monument by these powerful interests, and I think more than anything, it was sort of an ideological campaign. They just are opposed to the idea of public lands in general, and they're all particularly opposed to protected public lands. And so they wanted to take a shot at one of our oldest environmental laws, which is the Antiquities Act of 1906. And they did. They really harmed the integrity of that law when President Trump rolled back Bears Ears National Monument as well as Grand Staircase Escalante National Monument. And so, it was a stunning move, pretty unprecedented. And it really angered a lot of people, and I think it set the tone for this administration's conservation agenda, and it also set the tone for the opposition to that, to their agenda. So, yeah, it was kind of a opening shot out of the, opening shot of this administration, and it set the tone for the next 4 years.
So Trump officials drastically reduced the size of Bears Ears by 85%. What changes have happened as a result since then?
Well, it's been a little up in the air because there were immediately a ton of lawsuits filed to block that move. The administration pushed through a management plan for the area, but that too is sort of up in the air because the person that the administration put in charge of the Bureau of Land Management, which manages the area in part, his legitimacy has been called into question by federal courts. So it's all very much up in the air. But more than anything, I think it just, the main impact of that decision, apart from removing protections from this area that's full of, you know, all sorts of artifacts and sacred places to these tribes, apart from the direct impact on the ground by removing the protections, it really undermined the law. And that is a legacy, you know, that this administration will leave behind, just undermining these laws, you know, all sorts of environmental laws.
Today we are speaking with Jimmy Tobias, an independent reporter for The Guardian and The Nation. Jimmy was formerly a trail worker with the U.S. Forest Service, and I hope you can take some time to read Jimmy's report. We have it linked on our website, yourcallradio.org, revealed the full extent of Trump's meat cleaver assault on U.S. wilderness. If you have any questions about this, about the power that the Biden administration will have to reverse this damage, if you have questions about the Interior Department and why it is so important, you can give us a call at 866-798-8255, 866-798-8255. You can also email your call at kalw.org. So when the Biden administration is sworn in, for example, with bear's ears, what power do they have to roll this back?
Yeah, I mean, in the case of bear's ears, they could go in there on day one and reestablish the monument. I mean, it's completely within, you know, the law for Biden to do that. And there's many other, you know, so that's an easy fix in some regards to reestablish the monument because it's within the president's power. There are other things that have happened that will be more difficult to roll back, you know, regulations that have been put in place that will take time to change. And, you know, so, you know, obviously they'll have to spend time kind of undoing damage. And then in terms of, you know, actually a proactive, positive agenda, that'll be, you know, that'll take time too. But something like bear's ears, I think they can do that fairly quickly. So that at least I think is hopeful for those who want to see this place protected.
You also write that what happens after they open these places to oil and gas drilling, the land is often sold to the fossil fuel industry, sometimes for as little as $2 an acre. And this is according to the Wilderness Society Action Fund. Can you tell us more about that?
Yeah, the Interior Department runs an enormous leasing program on public lands across the country, as well as offshore leasing, where they will sell leases to oil and gas companies, coal companies, to, you know, access the public lands that are owned by all Americans and, you know, drill or mine. And I think one of the top priorities of the incoming administration will be to review that program. Because it's kind of dated, it's old, it's, you know, it has low royalty rates. And it's not, it hasn't ever really incorporated climate science or endangered species science into it on a programmatic scale. So I think what's going to happen, or I think what many people hope will happen, is that this administration will come in, put a moratorium on the federal oil and gas leasing program on public lands, and conduct a thorough, comprehensive review of that program's climate impacts, its impacts on wildlife, imperiled wildlife, and then decide moving forward whether to continue the program, whether to drastically scale it back, whether to end it altogether. And that's something that is within the power of the Interior Department to do. And I think that the Biden administration will come under a lot of pressure to do just that if it isn't already planning to do so.
It was also interesting to read and learn more about the Sutherland Institute, which is a Utah think tank. You write that founded to trumpet conservative principles, Sutherland has received more than $1 million from Koch brothers linked foundations and millions more from other wealthy benefactors. Can you tell us more about this think tank, the Sutherland Institute?
Sure. You know, it pursued this group in Utah pursued a very sophisticated campaign against Bear's Ears National Monument to roll back the protections of this monument. And this is a group with deep ties to the Utah state government, to Utah politicians in Washington, and is also connected to a network of other think tanks around the country that are funded by foundations tied to the Koch brothers and other right-wing billionaires. And together, this network has sort of created this echo chamber where they're constantly going after environmental laws, which they oppose, whether it's national monuments, whether it's the Endangered Species Act. And many of the people affiliated with this network of right-wing think tanks have positions in the federal government under Trump, including one of the top lieutenants at the Interior Department, a guy named Doug Dominic. He was involved not with Sutherland Institute, but with one of its fellow right-wing think tanks. And so they have an enormous amount of sway. Very few people kind of know about them because they sort of hide in the shadows as they pursue these campaigns. But they're very influential. And my investigation into their role in rolling back Bears Ears, you know, just showed how influential they were. They even helped the Utah legislature write a resolution condemning Bears Ears. It's just part of the forces at play that are driving these policies at the federal level that really don't benefit the American public, but benefit, you know, private industry groups and wealthy individuals who do not like public lands because they want their resources for themselves.
How often do the Koch brothers come up when you do your research and follow the money?
Yeah, I mean, you know, there is a movement against conservation protections in this country. There's a movement against environmental protections in this country, and a lot of it has to do with the courts. There's a conservative legal movement that wants to invalidate the Endangered Species Act, that wants to invalidate many of these conservation laws. They're constantly suing in the courts to, you know, block new environmental protections. They have these long game plans to get them declared unconstitutional. And they're also very influential in who gets picked by the right, you know, by the Republican Party to be in the federal judiciary. And so they're playing a long game against these laws, these think tanks, these, you know, pressure groups, these like dark money law firms. They all know each other. They're all part of an effort to invalidate environmental laws. And I think they're closer than ever right now to get what they want because of what's happened at the Supreme Court and the federal judiciary over the last 4 years.
According to Biden's campaign site, on day one, Biden will begin building on the Obama-Biden administration's historic conservation efforts by issuing an executive order to conserve 30% of lands and waters by the year 2030. The administration will work with tribal governments and Congress to protect sacred sites and public lands and waters with high conservation and cultural values. We have an email from Greg who says, what are the relative powers of the executive versus Congress when it comes to making and breaking the rules regarding public lands? Can the president override the Senate? If so, under what conditions? Do you know?
Yeah, I mean, there are a range of laws that Congress has passed to govern how our public lands are managed. But the federal government has the executive branch has enormous leeway because this is land that is owned by the federal government. So it can do, it can do what it wants within the law. And there's tons of leeway. But, for instance, this administration has within its power, many people believe, the ability to stop fossil fuel leasing on public lands. It has enormous sway under the Endangered Species Act and other laws like it to block bad developments, both on and off public land. There are limits obviously imposed by Congress, but, you know, I think this administration, the Trump administration, has shown that, you know, you can pursue a bold, aggressive agenda within those boundaries. And I think if Biden is really going to live up to his promise on his campaign platform, he's going to have to go in on day one with a very clear understanding of his powers and a very good set of appointees who are willing to, you know, to use their considerable powers to do what he claims he wants to do.
Well, we're going to take a quick break. Today, we are speaking with Jimmy Tobias, an independent reporter for The Guardian and The Nation. Jimmy was formerly a trail worker with the U.S. Forest Service, and he and two colleagues wrote a very important piece for The Guardian called Revealed, The Full Extent of Trump's Meat Cleaver Assault on U.S. Wilderness. After 4 years of Trump, protected places such as national monuments and wildlife refuges have opened to oil drilling, new maps show, with more on the way. And you can find this story at yourcallradio.org. This is Your Call. We'll be back after this. This is Your Call. I'm Rose Aguilar. Today, it's our One Planet series, and we're speaking with Jimmy Tobias, an independent reporter for The Guardian and The Nation. And we're talking about the damage that the Trump administration has done to the planet over the last 4 years and what the Biden administration can do to reverse some of this damage, especially when it comes to drilling on public lands. If you have any questions or comments, you can give us a call at 866-798-8255. You can also email yourcall@kalw.org. Let's now talk about what's happening in Carlsbad, New Mexico. This definitely doesn't get that much attention. You report that Carlsbad, New Mexico is located between two remarkable national parks, the towering Guadalupe Mountains and the glittering Carlsbad Caverns, consisting of 119 caves strung with, can you help me with this word, stalactites? I've never heard of this. What is that?
You know, they're like the formations within caves where the water kind of brings the minerals down into sort of icicle, you know, the stone kind of comes to look like an icicle sort of hanging off the ceiling. Or
I did not know that's what it was. Well, I learned a new word today. Thank you. You write that over the last 19 years, the Reverend David Rogers has watched Carlsbad transform from a sleepy desert town to a booming outpost of the oil and gas industry's expansion into the Permian Basin. So tell us a little bit about this. What's going on in Carlsbad?
Yeah, you know, New Mexico is, and the Permian Basin in general, is a very large, has become a major site of oil and gas drilling. And so it's really become a center of fights over regulations on oil and gas, especially around protected areas. But we, you know, one of the things we looked at in this section, was another of the Trump administration's, big regulatory rollbacks early on, which they basically got rid of, a regulation that Obama had put into place that sought to, you know, seriously reduce the amount of methane emissions that come from oil and gas drilling on federal land. And methane, you know, for listeners who might not know this, is an incredibly potent greenhouse gas, and it is released in significant amounts by public land oil and gas drillers. It's very dangerous for the future of the climate, and so the Obama administration wanted to get a handle on this pollutant, and so it put in place a regulation that, you know, basically made these public land drillers capture more of it and prevent leaks and such. And the industry hated it, and they used their connections at the Interior Department, where they have many allies, to basically get rid of this very sensible public interest regulation. And it was another early change during the Trump years that kind of signaled where this administration wanted to take our environmental laws and regulations.
And as you point out, drilling really took off during the Obama administration when companies began fracking, and we can talk about that more in a couple minutes. And you write, Trump officials really have set into motion plans to keep it growing.
Yeah, I mean, their goal is to lock in, their goal has been to lock in as many new oil and gas leases for the decade to come before they leave office. And they've also tried to put in place new land management plans that kind of lock in lease priorities on public lands around the West. They've gone all out for this industry. And this industry, you know, the oil and gas industry has gotten almost everything it's wanted from this administration. And that's, you know, that shouldn't be a surprise, because the Interior Secretary is a former oil and gas lobbyist. He knows all the players. His top lieutenants are, you know, close allies and sympathizers of the oil and gas industry. Many of them don't believe in climate change. They don't think it's really a serious problem. So, So yeah, they have ruled the public lands specifically for industry groups rather than for, you know, public health and the American public at large.
And you talk about how this really has affected the people who live in this area. Again, Reverend David Rogers has watched Carlsbad, New Mexico, transform from a sleepy desert town to a booming outpost of the oil and gas industry's expansion into the Permian Basin. You report that as the industry grew, the breaking point for Rogers was when a drilling pad was installed across the street from the home of a church family. Noxious fumes, nonstop industrial noise, and dead birds followed, as Rogers tells the story.
Yeah, my colleague, who I co-wrote this with, Emily Holden, she reported on this particular family and Reverend Rogers, and just, you know, the fact of the matter is, this industrial development, whether it's wildlife or human beings or air quality or water quality, you know, it has consequences. And that's why the environmental laws we have are put into place to protect people. And so when they're, you know, when things like the methane rule are, you know, thrown in the trash, when the Endangered Species Act is gutted, when, you know, there's not a balanced approach to how, you know, we use public lands, when it's all about oil and gas drilling, you know, actual people, actual animals, get hurt. And so I think that, you know, groups call it like multiple use. These public lands are supposed to be managed in a way that benefits many different, that benefit many different people. And that just hasn't happened, you know, in under the last 4 years. Only certain groups, certain select special groups have gotten access and benefits from the Interior Department.
And we know we've done so many shows about the communities living next to these sites. Poor communities, communities of color get hit the hardest. And I think what was so frustrating about whether or not Joe Biden was going to ban fracking, and Biden and Kamala Harris continually said, Joe Biden is not going to ban fracking. I mean, because we live in such a soundbite sort of gotcha, you know, media world, I just wanted there to be a little space so we could say, okay, let's talk about what fracking and its effect, like you said, on people's health and the planet, rather than, are you going to ban fracking? No, we're not. And then the conversation just ends there. So, you know, I think this is important to talk about. There's actually going to be a symposium, the health effects of oil and gas development, how fracking affects children's health, on December 5th. And hopefully we have some time to do a show about this. But what do you think about these simplistic, the simplistic way the media, some media, you know, really deal with an issue like fracking?
Yeah, well, there's no doubt that especially like the cable news channels, just, you know, they're just in it for the sound bites. They're in it for the headlines to stir up a little controversy and try to catch someone in a, you know, in a gotcha or whatever. I think the fact of the matter is that, at least when it comes to the public lands, the government, this administration, this incoming administration, the Biden administration, has the power to put a moratorium on fracking on federal lands and to actually do serious studies into its impacts on, you know, gateway communities, communities that live in and around public lands. They can do that and then and put the program on hold until they get, you know, serious answers. The Obama administration, during its time in office, they started to conduct a review of the public health impacts of mountaintop removal coal mining in Appalachia on human health. They wanted to figure out, you know, how this very destructive form of strip mining impacts people. And one of the first things the Interior Department did when they came into office was cancel the study at the behest. You know, the coal industry hated the study. They didn't want it to go forward. And the Trump administration canceled the study. And I think, you know, the Biden people could come in, they could revive that study. They could launch many other studies into the health impacts of fracking while putting the program on hold. And, you know, regardless of whether he says, oh, we're going to ban fracking or not, I mean, that's something he can do pretty quickly, I think. And that will make an enormous impact if they actually, if they're actually serious about, you know, combating both climate change and the deleterious effects of this industrial development on human health.
I wonder what you think about the changes that we will see under a Biden administration, given that when you look at the transition team, there are a lot of Obama people on that team, which is not surprising. But I just wonder how their thinking has changed on these issues, because Obama got a lot of criticism from groups like Food and Water Watch over his support of fracking. And I remember when he said, I just looked it up, this is from November 2018, you know, he taking credit for the U.S. oil and gas boom. He said that was me, people, almost bragging about the oil and gas boom in the U.S. How do you think some of these people who were on the Obama team, who are now on the Biden team, have changed when it comes to these issues?
Well, you know, I think that there is definitely a renewed sense of urgency, or not even renewed, just a deeper sense of urgency, both around the climate crisis and the extinction crisis. I mean, there's a lot of new science that's come out over the last 4 years. There's new movements that have emerged. And so I think that, I hope that the people coming into office look back on the Obama years and realize that public lands and wildlife and related issues didn't get nearly the priority they deserved. They're incredibly popular, but they always kind of seem to fall, you know, to the back burner. And, you know, I hope that there will be new, you know, some new blood brought into the department. I mean, they need new ideas. They need young people. They need new leadership. And if they can really go into office on day one with, you know, a clear vision of what they want, I think they can accomplish a great deal and go way past Obama's legacy, even over 8 years. But it will take, you know, I recently talked to, I've been reporting on a story on the Fish and Wildlife Service, and I talked to a lot of retirees about why Endangered Species Act protections are just not doing well right now, why the agency is really struggling to enforce the ESA. And a lot of it is because there's just not enough, quote unquote, air cover from the White House. Even during the Obama years, there just wasn't someone at the White House who really cared about the issues and could and bring them, you know, bring them to the forefront. And I think more than anything, there needs to be a couple really, you know, highly placed people who really understand and care about these issues and are willing to like spend, put their political futures at risk over taking a strong stand on these issues.
Yes, it's such a good point. And we're going to pay very close attention to who gets these key positions, and we will do shows about them. To that point, Alicia writes in, what do you think of putting Mary Nichols in charge of the EPA? The New York Times reports she could reverse some of the environmental travesty of the Trump administration. She served as chair of the California Air Resources Board, a post she has held since 2007.
Well, you know, I have to admit, the EPA is really, I'm pretty focused on the Interior Department. My colleague, Emily Holden, who I co-wrote the Guardian piece with, she's the EPA expert of our group. So she would have a much better answer to that question, because I'm not super familiar with Mary Nichols, and I don't cover the EPA much.
All right. Well, thank you, Alicia. We'll definitely do a show about the EPA in the coming weeks. And then we will, once we learn more about the Interior Department, we'll have Jimmy back to talk about that. Let's hear from a caller. Let's go to Bill in San Francisco. Hi, Bill. Welcome to the show.
Good morning. Thank you for having this guest. You know, America has since Love Canal, and I'm sure before then, which is 1979-1980, had the same lurking problem that developing nations do, which is having enough potable water. And we're poisoning it, and in other countries that are developing, they're having the problem of clean water, you know, more natural problems. I'm wondering if your guest has some good sources for like an integrated campaign to deal with things like water, land management, so that we not only deal with the issues of fracking, but also I'm thinking in the Southeast especially, where you have problems because of global warming and the loss of swamps for lack of a better word, swamps and wetlands. so that we're working on all, pardon the expression, eight cylinders.
Yeah, thank you. Jimmy?
Yeah, well, you know, the a lot of the headwaters to many, rivers, creeks, streams that provide, and aquifers that provide drinking water around, especially around the West, are public lands. And so, you know, one very important thing is to protect the landscapes that basically filter our water, you know, whether it's the mountains outside of Salt Lake City or, you know, the headwaters of the Colorado River. You know, public lands provide many of our drinking water, especially in the West. And so that's the first thing, like figuring out where the drinking water comes from and making sure the lands are protected. The other thing I'd say, at least in the Interior Department front, is that the Interior Department controls the Bureau of Reclamation, which is one of the biggest dam building agencies in the country, along mm-hmm. with the Army Corps of Engineers. And so it has enormous sway over the way that water is managed in the West. And the Interior Secretary, David Bernhardt, was a longtime lobbyist for a big ag group in California known as the Westlands Water District in the Central Valley. And he's gone into office and basically turned the Bureau of Reclamation into sort of the proxy of this big ag group. And to the detriment of places like San Francisco Bay, I mean, the water that flows into San Francisco Bay from the Sacramento and the San Joaquin rivers is water that's trapped behind, you know, and managed by the Bureau of Reclamation. And Bernhardt has prioritized sending this water to big agricultural interests in the Central Valley rather than allowing it to flow into the San Francisco Bay, where, you know, it supports all sorts of wildlife, the health of the entire Bay ecosystem. And so right in your own backyard, there's a huge water, you know, a huge fight over fresh water taking place between big ag and, you know, people who want to protect the Bay's ecosystem. And it all centers in the Interior Department, which runs the Bureau of Reclamation. And so so there, right there is a really important water issue that has, that has been fought over for a long, long time, in which the Interior Secretary has taken a side with big ag. And so hopefully this new administration can change course of the Bureau of Reclamation as well.
Wow. Well, thank you. We will also add that to our growing list of shows. And also, I highly recommend, Bill, if you check out The Guardian, they have an amazing section called America's Water Crisis. So, so many important stories here just about the struggle for so many people in the United States to just have access to clean water. We will definitely continue covering this in the future. Thank you for the call. We have an email from, Dee Dee, who says, how are the rights and concerns of Native Americans protected whose lands are involved in being named as protected or public parks or whatever you want to call it and leasings under management plans? She specifically wants to know about treaty rights.
Yeah, well, you know, I'm not an expert in treaty rights or tribal law, but, you know, my understanding is that treaty rights are the supreme law of the land. And so they have precedence over pretty much everything else. And obviously that hasn't been the case in practice, but legally it's how it should be. And the administration, you know, the Interior Department also is home to the Bureau of Indian Affairs. And so it has a lot to do in this area. Bears Ears, one of the reasons Bears Ears was special was because it was a landscape, it was a monument that was proposed by a coalition of tribes. And they were supposed to have a huge amount of say in the way that the monument was managed. That's never happened, mostly because the monument was rolled back. But hopefully, you know, in this new administration, there can be sort of a new course set, both in the way lands are protected, you know, as with Bears Ears, where it was kind of promoted by a tribal coalition, and in the way it's managed, which, you know, ideally would have, you know, a huge amount of input and say and decision-making from the tribes themselves. I think that's an area that there's a lot of work to do in. But I think it's also an area where the Biden administration appears to be pretty in tune. A number of the people leading the transition are members of various tribes. And so I think, you know, indigenous communities are getting a pretty solid voice in the transition team so far, so it appears. Mm-hmm. But obviously, you know, only time will tell about this administration, this incoming administration.
Right. Well, thanks for the email, Didi. Ray writes, in Santa Cruz, we have a new national monument as well, the Coast Cotati National Monument. There is a proposal right now to allow bow hunting by junior high school kids on this property. This will be in areas where hikers and mountain bikers frequent. The BLM controls this property. What can we do to lobby Biden to staff the Bureau of Land Management with actual environmentalists and overturn this proposal?
Well, you know, I will say that the current leadership of the Bureau of Land Management is a guy named William Perry Pendley, who is a longtime opponent of the Bureau of Land Management, a longtime opponent of environmental laws. And obviously, he's about to lose his job. But, you know, the BLM is an agency that has a culture within it of being pretty pro-industry, or at least it has been historically. And the Clinton administration and the Obama administration, I think, tried to change that that culture a little bit, but it's gone very much in the opposite direction the last 4 years. I mean, one of the key changes that the Trump administration made was actually moving the Bureau of Land Management out of Washington, D.C. to Grand Junction, Colorado. And in doing so, they basically pushed out all sorts of career civil servants at the agency and made space in what many saw as a bid to stock the agency with, you know, like-minded pro-industry conservative operatives or, you know, bureaucrats. And so I think one of the first things to do and one of the big questions about the Biden administration is whether they're going to move the BLM back to Washington, where it can have, you know, closer proximity to congressional oversight and things like that. You know, as for the specific monument, I don't know enough about it to weigh in, but these agencies, you know, these agencies, if you press them, can be responsive.
Well, thank you for the email, Ray. And just to add to what you said about William Pendley, who was acting Bureau of Land Management director for 14 months before a judge removed him in late September. According to CNN, William Pendley is a climate denier with a history of racist remarks. He has cited anti-Muslim figures and compared undocumented immigrants to a cancer and blamed them for diseases. In 2017, he made light of killing at-risk species, saying, "Out west, we say shoot, shovel, and shut up." And this is the guy who was put in charge of running the BLM.
That's right, yeah. Yeah, you know, Mr. Pendley comes out of the same conservative legal movement that is trying to basically get rid of laws like the Endangered Species Act, the Antiquities Act. He's long been a figure in that movement. He used to work for a group called the Mountain States Legal Foundation, which also received backing from, you know, foundations tied to the Koch brothers and other right-wing billionaires. ExxonMobil, things like that. So, you know, he's a perfect symbol of the kind of influence that's taken over the Interior Department under President Trump. And, you know, obviously, you know, the Trump administration lost this election and the majority of Western, big Western public land states voted against the Trump administration. And to me, that says something, you know, that even Arizona went against them.
Right.
So yeah, I think Mr. Pendley's time in office is, he doesn't have long there.
And we're going to have to do, you know, more shows on this. But I just wanted to ask you before we have to end here, the New York Times and The Washington Post have pieces this morning about Trump officials rushing to auction off rights to the Arctic National Wildlife Refuge before Biden can block it. Charles writes, what can the Biden administration do to limit oil development in the Arctic National Refuge?
You know, I am not an Arctic expert. I would direct you to a fellow reporter, Adam Fetterman, who's been following this very, very closely. He's on Twitter and has been publishing a lot about it. You know, I mostly stick my coverage to the sort of Intermountain West as well as endangered species issues. But I do know that Congress has been involved there. And so it may require some kind of legislative deal. But again, I am not the person for that one.
Yeah. And also, Charles, we've been reporting on this for many years. According to the Washington Post, it's unclear how much appetite, it's just a weird way to say this, but it's unclear how much appetite there is in the oil and gas industry for drilling in the refuge, given the lack of infrastructure there and the public backlash that could accompany such a move. And I also want to quote a woman who was on our show before, Bernadette Dementiev, executive director of the Gwich'in Steering Committee, whose people have traveled with the caribou on the refuge for thousands of years. She said, any company thinking about participating in this corrupt process should know that they will have to answer to the Gwich'in people and the millions of Americans who stand with us. We have been protecting this place forever. So we will keep an eye on this and do a show on that. We're almost out of time. Jimmy, just final thoughts here on the areas that you really focus on: public lands, the Interior Department, and, you know, what changes we, well, actually, real quick, in the next 2 months, what else can the Trump administration do?
Yeah, you know, they're pushing to finalize all sorts of regulatory rollbacks, you know, whether it's going after the Migratory Bird Treaty Act, which is a very old and important law that protects birds, to this ANWR, you know, push to all sorts of land management plans that they've been pursuing. You know, there's a lot they could still lock in, including more leasing. But again, because they've done so much with executive orders, so much of what they've done can be undone. And I think one area where I'm really looking is in the area of endangered species, because I think that the Endangered Species Act is probably our most important and our most powerful environmental law. And it's never been put into effect in the way it could be. It's never been employed to its full extent. And it offers a tremendous amount of power to block bad projects. And I think, I'll be watching very closely to see if the Biden administration is actually going to embrace the ESA and use it to its full extent, or continue the long bipartisan trend of kind of letting it fall to the wayside.
Well, Jimmy, we'd love to have you back to talk about that. And I just wanted to let you know that Dee Dee wrote in and said that you're one of the most knowledgeable and informative people she's run across, and she doesn't know how long. She just wanted to thank you for all of your great work.
Oh, well, thanks to her. That's really nice.
Jimmy Tobias is an independent reporter for The Guardian and The Nation. Thank you, Jimmy, for your work, and thanks for joining us.